Hello, everybody. This is Flares and Films, and in this week's episode, we're talking about The Happening.
Hit the music!
Hey, everybody. I'm Michael Flaherty.
I'm Colleen Flaherty. This is Flaherty's on Films, a super cool podcast where we talk about what's happening. Michael.
You sure are.
What are we talking about this week?
I'll tell you what's happening after I open up the Google document that we have for the movie. And you're going to notice that there's no like downtime because I'm still talking. In fact,
flawless.
In fact, I'm still talking. How do I try and drive for your team? No, go to drive. See, like, this is all good radio.
This is good banter. Is what
the movie is called The Happening, which is why I'm typing that into the search box. And here is the description. A science teacher, his wife, and a young girl struggle to survive a plague that causes those infected to commit suicide.
So, Michael, this was your pick.
This was my pick.
Why did you pick The Happening?
You know, I will be honest. This podcast is a podcast about celebrating cinema. But I did know that it was not very good. That's what I've heard. In fact, I've heard it's one of the legendarily bad movies. You know, not that it's just like, oh, not great. You know, it's one of the worst ones. And I feel like M. Night Shyamalan has made good films. He's made one of my favorite films, Sixth Sense. It's really, really good. But he's kind of a joke. And I don't know if that's because of this movie or just because of the fact that he did twists all the time.
I feel like it was kind of a joke like in the mid-aughts to 2010. But I feel like he's kind of come back with some better films recently.
I personally do not like his new films, but that's fine.
I don't like them, but I think they're not. I don't think they're jokes. That's what I mean.
So I've just always heard about this movie. We're going to spoil the movie, so I'm just going to say it now.
Oh, yeah. If you have not seen the movie, you do not want it spoiled. Just turn this off because we're going to go right for it.
It's the plants. It's the plants that make everyone evil and kill each other. And that's just always
kill
themselves. And it just seemed really silly and dumb. And I thought it'd be fun to watch. So that's why I picked it.
I got it. So yes, to your point, I remember like M. Night Shyamalan by this time, he had made a couple stinkers, right? Like A Lady in the Water and stuff. And this movie was mocked a lot. And it was mocked a lot for the twist being the trees kill you. Now, first of all, this is not a twist
but I mean, it is mockable, just that
it
fact.
Is. So here's the thing, though. Having now watched this movie, what I think the real twist is that's not what makes this a bad movie. Like, I don't think that's the worst premise. It's just everything else about the movie is bad.
Yeah, here's what's great. Our first segment that we call, bam, Time for Sam.
The part of the show where Sam comes on and tells us what is he thought I was going to say happening.
God, I'm slow. I didn't even pick up on that.
One day while driving, M. Night Shyamalan was hit with an idea. It was one of those ideas that he just couldn't shake.
Was he in a field at the time?
He was driving through the wilderness. Yeah.
Was it a bright, sunny day? He was like, wait a minute.
What if?
Look at that innocuous, beautiful spring breeze.
He would go home and write a spec script and title it The Green Effect. He brought that spec script to numerous studios, but none were interested. However,
why don't they just call the movie The Plants Did It? You know, that'd be better.
I was going to make fun of that title, but then I'm like, is The Happening better?
However, Shyamalan was unable to shake the idea no matter what, so he took the notes the studio had given him during their rejections, and he rewrote the script. He brought the new version to 20th Century Fox, who greenlit it. However, the new script needed a new title, thus The Happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess we should talk about the premise of the film. The movie poses the idea that what would happen if plants evolved a new defense system to kill their greatest predator, humans? Although there is no documented evolution that gives trees the ability to manipulate humans into committing suicide, there are several examples. That is fiction.
Okay.
There are several examples of plants' evolutions that are defense mechanisms. So plants have been known to manipulate their chemicals to take over areas with other plants in them. And in one case, there's a plant that was eaten by a deer, and it released pheromones to warn other plants to produce less tasty leaves. So plants can do this, where they can kind of manipulate the situation. I read an article about this, and they dived into like the closest thing, the example that's brought up in the film about like plants attacking humans. But
I think one of the examples in the film was like an animal that could release a spore that will specifically only kill one other kind of animal. But that's... Well,
it was the Crimson Tide example that they gave.
Yeah, they had a few examples in the movie.
Yeah, so basically it was just like there's this algae that releases this toxic called Dominic acid. And it actually, if you ingest it and you ingest a lot of it, it mimics one of the molecules in your brains that have that enables the electrical transmissions, so it can cause memory loss and seizures and stuff like that. But you have to like drink a shit ton of it to have that happen. Sure. So it's one of those things. But so basically, this whole article, the scientist is like, yeah, sure, plants can manipulate to like protect themselves, but they don't have a conscience. So they
imagine going to school for 10 years to get your PhD to have to write an article about why the happening isn't real.
Yeah, he was like, it was a little painful to watch because it's just no. So anyways, while writing the script, Shyamalan had one person in mind for the lead, Mark Wahlberg. Wahlberg immediately signed on.
In his mind.
In his mind.
Only one actor has the caliber to pull off my vision. Mark E. Mark.
He wanted Marky Mark. I don't know what to tell you. It was Marky Mark or bust kind of a thing. For the role of Alma, Amy Adams was the first choice. However, she decided to turn it down. So the role would ultimately go to Zooey Deschanel. Another important character in any Shyamalan movie is the director himself. This was his first film he didn't make a physical cameo in. Oh. However, he is in the film as the voice of Joey, Alma's tiramisu friend.
Can I say, I've seen a lot of M. Night films. I don't remember him ever being a cameo.
I know he does cameo, and people have made fun of him for always doing a cameo in his own film, which feels... I don't know. It feels like a little loaded.
Hitchcock thing.
Hitchcock used to do that. What's his face? Who likes to say the N-word a lot in his movies? He does it.
Quentin Tarantino.
Mel Brooks.
Yes, that one. Yeah. So like, I don't know. I felt like it was weirdly pointed at M. Night. For some reason, he's different from those other guys in a way that I can't figure out what it is.
Well, his name is M. Night. Come on.
So filming started in August of 2007 in Philadelphia. The entire movie was shot in sequence, and about 85% of the film was filmed outside. That is end of anything I could figure out about the filming of this film. Anyways.
What do you know about their wind technology?
I don't know about their wind. They didn't.
You mean a fan?
No.
I think we figured it out.
Technology. I was just curious.
I remember, Michael, we were watching it, and you're like, how do they just have the wind? I'm like, you can see half of the tree is blowing and half of it isn't.
No,
it's just a big fan.
No. They had multiple fans because you could see some grass, and then you saw another plane of no movement, and then another plane where the trees were moving. It's like, okay, clearly there's more than one fan.
So you got to the bottom of that mystery.
Yeah.
The cutting edge technology of many fans.
How big were the fans? These are examples of facts that Sam could have had.
I could have had. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
As I was explaining to Colleen and Michael before we started recording, it feels like just no one wants to talk about this film. So there's not a lot of facts out there.
Besides, saying this movie's actually good. But people are saying
that. Yeah, we'll get to that. Okay. We'll get to that.
All right.
So The Happening premiered on June 13th, 2008, which was a Friday the 13th. They deliberately planned that to make it a spooky premiere.
That's every Halloween, every scary movie, right?
Pretty much, yeah. It was Shyamalan's first R-rated film due to its graphic and disturbing images of suicide. Mm-hmm. The tagline for this film, I don't know, did you guys see this at all?
Let me guess it. The happening. The happening. I don't know.
That just happened.
I was going to make a happening joke, but that's already... It's too obvious, but you nailed it.
I love the trailer, Michael, when you played it, and like they say the word happening four times, you're like, that has to be a joke, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that, I imagine.
So the tagline for this film is, we've sensed it. You've seen the signs. Now, ..
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
So they're like, remember that he's made good movies?
Yeah, so you can definitely see they're trying to tie it in with other ones as... Shyamalan's hit films. That's kind of was their way to get people in, because he was kind of just this big name. He had hit, and then he had kind of a few that were duds, but he was still considered one of the greats. Like, they were comparing him to Steven Spielberg, kind of a thing.
You know, even and now, I can't think of prominent horror directors, really. But I'm an idiot. So.
Like Romero or...
Jordan Peele probably is the best one I know.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a good one.
I think, but Michael, you and I aren't really horror genre fans.
I said I'm an idiot. I put that out there.
I didn't say you're an idiot.
No, I did.
I think that's not an idiotic thing to not know directors of films you don't really
contextually
like.
Contextually, as in movie director wise.
Anyway, The Happening would gross over $30 million in its opening weekend, coming in third behind The Incredible Hulk and Kung Fu Panda.
Sure.
It would go on to make $163.4 million in the box office. So it did well in the box office, but it was immediately considered to be Shyamalan's worst film. Which is saying a lot for a guy who was riding high.
Did you say what the budget was?
It was $48 million.
That's a lot.
I'm surprised it's that much.
Yeah.
I bet Mark Wahlberg was like $46 million.
Mark Wahlberg was a big portion of it, yeah. But, I mean, it was written for him, but you can't go without him.
And multiple fans.
If they're big enough, it's probably up there.
They're like, I only have $47 million. Make it 48. I need a second fan.
Do I win or not? That's our whole monster.
So it was not nominated for any Academy Awards.
Huh.
Uh-huh. But it was nominated for 4 Golden Raspberries or Razzie Awards, including... Worst Picture, Worst Actor for Mark Wahlberg, Worst Director, and Worst Screenplay. It was beaten almost every category by The Love Guru.
Yeah, sure.
But it wasn't just the critics, the film viewers, or even the Academy members who hated this film. In 2013, while at a press conference for his new movie, The Fighter, Wahlberg answered a question about meeting his co-star, Amy Adams. Quote, we had actually had the luxury of having lunch before to talk about another movie, and it was a bad movie that I did. She dodged the bullet. And then I still able to... I don't want to tell you that movie, all right? Okay, The Happening. Fuck it. It is what it is. Fucking trees, man. The plant. Fuck it. You can't blame me for not wanting to play a science teacher. At least I wasn't playing a cop or a crook.
I love... everything about that. You don't have to.
I love
do
how
like
he
a,
was gonna pause. Like he was gonna. Nah, I'm not gonna. No, I'm
love,
gonna tell
I
you.
I love how you don't have to use like a Boston accent to tell that was Mark Wahlberg. Just you could just see it.
So
great. Fuck it. I mean, I wasn't a cop. What do you want?
So it seems like the problem with this film, one of the problems, is that the tone of it was wrong. From the beginning, The Happening was intended to be a B-movie. So think it was inspired by The Birds and Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but we all kind of have that image in our head of like that B-movie, right? Where it's like so bad it's funny kind of a thing.
Sure. And, well, a little campy.
Yeah, exactly. So it was unclear to audiences watching the film if it was supposed to be funny or serious. So after this was kind of brought up, Shyamalan said, quote, I think it's a consistent kind of farce humor, you know, like The Blob. The key to The Blob is that you just never takes itself too seriously. And according to Shyamalan, it was not the audience's fault. They didn't know how to feel throughout the film. Quote, I think I was inconsistent. That's why you couldn't see it.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. That's good of him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, it was interesting, too, because after people brought up that quote from Mark Wahlberg, he's like, you know, no one else has ever said they didn't like working with me. So, you know, it's his feelings.
Aw. M. Night.
He was kind of cute. So for my final fact for you guys today, although the movie was immediately hated, it does seem like a decade later, it is finally getting the appreciation for what it attempted to be. Several publications and critics are now saying that after some time and on a second viewing, The Happening is a great and accomplished film, even stating it was the greatest B movie of its day, which was exactly what Shyamalan wanted.
Sure.
Okay, and I forgot your question of the week. Honestly, no one wants to talk about this film, so I have no questions That's for you so involving
fine.
The Happening.
That's so funny.
So I asked Brian what he would like to have a question about, and he suggested whales. So I have a whale Whoa. Question
All
for you.
All right, here we go.
Ready?
Yeah.
What is the average lifespan of a bowhead whale?
What's a bowhead whale?
50 years. They live in Antarctica. 50 years.
80 years.
More than 200.
Cool.
That's a bowhead whale was caught in 2007 with a harpoon embedded in its neck from the 1880s.
That's a cool fact.
Sam, right? I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but you should probably just do animal facts every time.
Ooh, you guys want one more? What is the whale's closest living relative?
Okay. A shrimp. Wait. Because that'd be funny.
lobster. We both just suck.
It's actually a hippopotamus.
Oh.
That makes sense because they're big.
Because they're mammals.
Yep.
Oh, so. I forgot about mammals.
Yeah.
Michael, did you say it makes sense because they're big?
Yeah. I don't take that back. Fight me. And that was Sam. Time for Sam. You know, I don't know. We'll probably talk about this later. But Sam's point is pretty interesting that it was intended to be a B movie. All I'll say about it right now is that if this was 100% successful, you know, he did exactly like, yeah, achieved it. Would it still be good? Because I fucking hate the birds.
That's a really good question. And I also, you know, it almost feels a little like he's rewriting history.
Yeah.
But the fact that he kind of owned that, oh, you know what? I just didn't do what I wanted to do.
You know what I bet? I bet he's nice. And I bet he's not throwing the studio under the bus. Because I could imagine he's like, oh, it's kind of cool. It's like a B movie. And the studio's like, no, you got to make it like a normal horror movie. So it's marketed like, oh, it's so scary. But then it's silly when you go. And that's kind of the conflict of tone. But he can't just say, fuck my bosses, because he still wants to be employed.
He just does seem like a nice guy. I've heard he's good to work with. And I mean, the beginning of Sam's quote, I was like, that can't be right. But then the end of it makes sense, because the tone is so inconsistent. Because the beginning of it is like a really good traditional, like, psychological thriller horror.
It is freaky.
So I don't like the beginning is in no way can't be B movie.
Yeah. Yeah. So that would be the director's fault. I don't know.
It's hard to say. We don't really know.
Let's get people who know how to say things.
Yes. Let's go to Critics Corner. And we did a little something different this week because it was pretty universally panned by critics. So our Amazon reviewers are going to be all 5-star reviews. People who love the film.
That's interesting.
So I'm going to start. At first, a great deal happens. Then nothing much happens for quite some time. Then something so underwhelming happens that one is left wondering, did that really just happen? And Nigel Floyd of Time
What a great out. Review, because it's always also carrying that same, is this serious, is this stupid tone.
Yes.
This is by Valerie H., who's an Amazon reviewer. Really enjoyed this movie. Fuck with the planet and die. Good message. Take care of the Earth or else. All right,
that's a good message.
Environmentalist cause, yeah.
For reasons still unknown, Shyamalan wrote the dialogue this stiffly and instructed his performers to act like they'd never said words or interacted with each other before, said Jason Bailey of FlavorWire.
Yeah, I mean, I don't read FlavorWire personally, but I might pick up an issue.
I gotta tell you, this is our first week where I think that our reviewers are funnier than the Amazon reviewers.
This is by Starling01. Compared to everything going on late this year, the attack of the tree seems perfectly believable. Okay. Really enjoyed watching it this afternoon. It doesn't make much sense, but yeah. So what?
I love the challenge. Fuck you. I had a good time.
Sorry, who cares? Yeah.
This is from Peter Bradshaw of The Guardian.
Bring me Peter
Bradshaw. What is most bizarre are Shyamalan's touches of comedy. Bizarre because they appear to indicate that he realizes how ridiculous everything is, but they do nothing to mitigate the film's absurdity and plausibility. His movie lands decisively on the wrong side of the laugh with, laugh at divide.
I feel like Peter is good. I usually like his opinions.
And what did you think about that?
I thought it was also good.
The way you set that up, I thought you were going to disagree.
Yeah, I did it bad. This is our last review. It's by Holy Smokes, who is an Amazon reviewer. Judging from the amount of bad reviews, this phenomenon is already happening. Okay. The plants were attacking stupid, fearful people. Agree with the reviewer that stated, excellent movie if your IQ is over 100.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see this coming. Science is so far out of reach for the common entertained individual that I am not surprised at the negative reviews. Only entertained at the correlation between the negative reviews and the audacity.
Actuality.
Reading. Actuality of 2012 being the year of the lowest SAT scores in U.S. history. So that would explain why I don't like it.
You're just too fucking dumb science in this movie.
Clean, what I didn't realize is that this was already happening.
Right.
And that's crazy. Already happening.
Should we just tell people what this movie is about?
Yeah, let's walk through this plot together.
All right. So we open New York City, City of Dreams. Is that Los Angeles? Anyway, so it's Central Park and people began committing mass suicide. And I actually do agree that the beginning scene is really good. Like, it's very chilling. Everyone just stops except for one person who's like normal. I don't really get why that happens. And then people start walking backwards. Don't get why that happens. Not important because it looks amazing. Like, this is a thing where sometimes a movie can be good enough to not have a sensible explanation. And this wasn't that movie, but for 2 seconds it was.
Well, I mean, you know, this also happens to be the part where it doesn't have Mark Wahlberg or Zooey Deschanel, you know?
We're going to get into that.
I feel like this movie is actually okay when you remove those two elements.
Yeah. So like, it's, I don't know, it's just like a really cool, well done shot in Central Park, and then people just start killing themselves. It is really cool and dramatic. And then it's like cut to scenes like construction workers throwing themselves off buildings and panic in the news.
Yeah, it's kind of reminds me of the opening of Scream a bit, where it's its own little self-contained thing that kind of escalates super fast, and it's just kind of well done.
Yes, agreed. So we learn, okay, so initially they believe it's like a bioterrorism attack that's making people go crazy with an airborne toxin. And the behavior is like spreading through the northeastern United States, focused on cities.
Elliot Moore. Is that his name?
Elliot, yeah. I think they say that a lot.
A high school science teacher in Philadelphia hears about the attacks and decides.
Okay, wait. I just had to say, if you guys are picturing Mark Wahlberg as a science teacher, it's worse than you think.
I mean, it's not like the script portrays him as like a mega nerd. Like, I feel like he's still like, whoa, what's happening? I'm Mark Wahlberg. You know, he's still got that hyper energy. You know,
remember him in the classroom, though? It looks unnatural.
It doesn't look right. Yeah.
And then he's hitting on that kid and it's weird. And it's
do you remember the dialogue there? I don't remember what actually.
All I remember is he like, and when kid's like, I don't care what happens to the bees. And he's like, you're gorgeous now. You have a beautiful, perfect face now. But here's how horribly ugly you're going to get because of science. And then the kid feels bad. He's like, nah, kid, you're going to be beautiful forever. And we're like, what just happened?
Yeah, and then we kept asking that for 90 minutes. They are
oh, I get it.
They are accompanied by his friend, Julia.
Wait. Oh, yeah, I feel like I cut you off mid-sentence.
Oh, hears about the attacks and goes to Harrisburg by train. Oh, we're going fast. Goes to Harrisburg by train with his wife, Alma. They are accompanied by his friend, Julian, played by John Leguizamo, and Julian's 8-year-old daughter, Jess. Julian's wife is stuck in Philadelphia, but is expected to meet them in Harrisburg.
So here's another bad element of the film. So I don't know how I feel about Marky Mark as a person. I like Zooey Deschanel. I'm always defending her. And they are just terrible in this movie. And they have no chemistry as husband and wife. But the weird thing is we're introduced to Zooey and him as a couple on the outs. And they spend... This is a 90-minute film. And they spend a surprising amount of time on their marriage falling apart, but not explaining it to us at all.
That's fine. I mean, that would work with good actors and a good script.
Yeah. Or like people else. Who seemed like they had ever met before. Like, there was just no chemistry between them.
Can you give
me... So the movie was actually supposed to start with a fight scene. They decided to take it out so that you would have to learn about their relationship as they were going through this.
Boy, does that not pay off.
It could have. I mean, it would be engaging to watch. Can you defend Zooey? Because I've only seen her in this and Elf. And I feel like she's the same character where she's just kind of floaty and like, oh, I'm Zooey. I just don't feel like she could have been good at
this. I actually liked her in that Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie, 500 Days of Summer.
Oh, okay.
I liked her in Yes Man, where she was an inappropriately young girlfriend to Jim Carrey. I think in New Girl, she's actually quite funny, but also can give like a real person performance. And yeah, I feel like people write her off like she's like the ultimate twee girl, the like
manic
pixie dream girl. And no, she's not like the most amazing actor ever, but she's got good comedic timing. I think she's good in a sitcom setting. And I think she's a really good singer. I like her stuff.
But there's just nothing about her that makes sense for this character.
No. Well... I mean, in horror thriller films, you do not need a very developed actor, right? Like, she could have just been a bland whatever person that Marky Mark has to protect and love. But the fact that she couldn't even do that because, again, they seem like people who are strangers in an elevator.
Yeah.
Kind of like, she didn't need to do anything if they could have just done that.
Yeah, just they're both of them seem like they're in a comedy movie. I don't know what kind of direction they were getting.
Both of them seem like they're doing a kind of okay deadpan comedy, right?
Yeah, like, totally.
Like they're both in an awkward British comedy.
And I would watch that movie and probably like it.
Right? Oh, that would be funny. Anyway, so yeah, it's very bizarre. Oh, and she keeps getting texts from someone named Joey.
Mm-hmm. True.
And... Okay. Oh, and I also feel like, so John Leguizamo has like, so Zooey and Mark have this kind of weird, like floaty, disaffected, like, are they even in a thriller movie? Like, the world is going to shit. They all have to evacuate New York City, which is a hilarious scene because they go to Penn Station and like nobody's there. Like it's a normal day at Penn Station, despite evacuating the entire city. And yeah, Mark is just never concerned or agitated, and John Leguizamo has dialed up to 100.
Yeah, John Leguizamo, he's got some weird lines, but overall his performance seems like, oh, you're in a scary movie. Like, I can tell that.
Yeah, and it seems like that was just an element so they could introduce a kid into it and give it some stakes, because obviously you're not going to care about Zooey or Mark.
Yeah, because John dies right away.
Yeah, and he says, there's this, well, I think this will go to the next one, but eventually he hands the kid over to go get his wife, and he goes, "Don't you take my daughter's hand if you don't mean it."
Say it that silly.
it's okay. So he does it like a normal, like a really, really intense actor. But like Zoe's just like, "Hey, come on, you could stay with us." And then like his energy is so not in keeping with the other actors in the scene. And it's such a weird line.
I feel like you're putting the blame on the wrong side at that.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. Mr. Leguizamo, he is fantastic in this. I that is not a criticism of him, but I don't feel like he was bouncing off the energy with his scene mates. That's all I'm saying.
Can I bring up Bruce Willis for a second? Because he's he's in other M. Night movies. I feel like we say a lot of good things about Bruce Willis, but apparently he's a Trumper. He's like a anti-masker now.
Aww.
So I just feel like at our slots of actors that we just like a lot in this show, let's trade Bruce and get John Leguizamo.
Oh shit. Cause now I have to say something nice about Bruce Willis for a second.
Fuck.
Now that you bring him up.
Fuck.
I'm sorry. It's right. Just that I think what's kind of funny is we're making fun of this like kind of understated weird thing that, and it feels like that's what Bruce Willis does successfully in The Sixth Sense. Mm-hmm.
But you should wear masks.
I'm really sad about that. I didn't.
Yeah, he's a fuckhead apparently. Shit. Okay. Did you read this whole paragraph?
I haven't. Okay, so the Retray loses contact in a fantastic scene where, like, suddenly, like, nothing's working, and they get out of the small town, and they're like, "Oh, we've tried to reach someone, but we can't get in contact." And then Mark, in the weirdest line, goes, "In contact with whom?" Because like, he's a teacher, and they go, "Everyone."
Can I say I was coming into this like, "Oh, this movie's a train wreck," but. It actually, like I said before, when you take out the elements of Mark Wahlberg and Zooey Deschanel, it is good. I feel like there's a lot of cool shots. I remember there's one
totally
in the high school, and all the teachers are like gathered around. And there's one really cool shot where you see all the faces of the teachers, but then you just kind of see Mark Wahlberg's face in the background, but it's framed in such an interesting way. So I mean,
M. Night knows what he's doing.
He's a good director, and yeah. I could say that after watching this movie.
Okay. That was a nice thing to say.
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, they're in this little town and they're just trying to like get out, I guess, because it seems like they're really attacking like densely populated areas. But Julian's wife is in Princeton, so he's going to leave the kid and go get her, which is dumb. But mm-hmm. I guess they just need to kill him off. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he hitches a ride, and of course they get to Princeton. It's been hit by the toxin, and then the driver just runs into a tree and he commits suicide in a pretty gross way.
By the way, if you have not seen this film, the toxin is not something you see. What you do see is wind.
What do you see?
On a bright summer day. Like a breeze.
Yeah, not like, oh, wind, whoosh. No, like, oh, there's a gentle, lovely breeze.
And
do you remember the scene where they're all on the phone and she's, I guess, talking to her daughter in the house and she's like, "Are you in the house, babe?" She's like, "Yes. I'm in the house. They're all dead. Oh, the trees are moving." Like in a line that makes no sense unless you know what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, imagine a movie where clips of wind is accompanied by the Jaws music. I mean, that's basically this film.
Yes. So anyway, Michael, go on.
All right, okay. So Elliot, Nalma, and Jess, the girl, hitch a ride with a nursery man. Is that a
nursery, like a tree nursery?
I'm far away from my computer. That's my excuse for not being able to read. Nursery.
How
man.
Old are you?
Not 30 yet. The nursery man believes that plants are responsible as they can release chemicals to defend themselves from threats. The group are joined by the other survivors and split into two groups, with Elliot, Alma, and Jess in the smaller group.
So this is a really great part of the film because we're like 40 minutes in and there's no...
I think we're like 15 minutes in because I was just, yeah. It was really
That's
weirdly
true. It
fast.
Goes fast. So first of all, it's like, wow, it's so crazy. They just happen to get in with a plant expert. And so, yeah, there's no twist as to who the bad guy is because they just like meet this guy and he goes into this very long explanation with examples of how plants do this. So plants are probably doing this. That's plants. And we're like, all right. So we're just told what the movie is. Like, just then.
I wonder.
It's not a twist.
Yeah. I wonder if you go to make a movie and you and your movie starts with a question like that. Like, oh, what if the plants started killing us? You have to have a better answer than they would just kill us. You know what I mean? Because then that's just literally what happens. Like, I don't need to see this movie.
Yeah. What's very bizarre about this movie. I guess we could just talk about it because they did just say what it is. But... So the idea is they're like, it's a warning because they don't do it all over the world. It's like they've coordinated and decided to start in big cities and then work their way out. Like they decide to start in Central Park just to make an impact.
The plants.
So apparently the plants are psychologically torturing us. So that's already a bit silly. But now, as you recall, Michael and I were saying, it's the slight breeze that's attacking the big groups. And it's like, but trees don't control the wind. So,
yeah,
what? Like, it's like the wind is attacking the big groups. In fact, there's a scene in the next paragraph. So I'll tell you. So they realize the larger group is affected by the toxin when they split into two groups. So the wind attacked the bigger group, not the smaller group. But again, the trees cannot control wind. So what? It's fine. So then they decide to go into smaller pockets because they go after big groups and that's important or whatever.
Yeah, like the wind does appear to be chasing a group. Like you see a line in the field.
It's so funny. just this lovely slow breeze. I'm like, it's coming. It's coming. You guys, I guess what's also not very good about this movie is after the first scene, you just never really feel tension, you know? I don't know. I guess it's just because, as you mentioned, it's really just Dan and Mark and Zoe, but like you don't really care what happens to them, and it doesn't feel like a threat is looming, really.
It kind of do. I mean, it is scary, right? That's just the wind, and it's an invisible enemy.
I guess it's because Mark and Zoe are just so nonplussed that I don't feel it.
That they're just like so funny.
Oh my god, this is a scene. So she talks about how she went to a restaurant with Joe, which I thought was so funny because Michael's like, I bet Joe's gonna come save the day.
They're gonna bring it back.
And so he's like, we just had tiramisu and I'm sorry I didn't tell you, blah blah blah. And then Mark Wahlberg does this bizarre long monologue about going to a pharmacy and talking to a cute pharmacist, and she recommends this cold medicine. He didn't even have a cold and he bought it, and he bought $8. He bought an $8 thing of cough syrup. And would I tell this story? Would I told this story, made it up about a superfluous $8 bottle of cough syrup? And she goes, did you? And he just looks at her, nods slowly. It was so bizarre, so out of place.
It was so compelling though, because it like was really funny. Like, he's clearly a very good comedic actor, just came to the wrong movie.
Yeah, but again, in that moment they are running away from the trees trying to kill them, and because she starts that with, you know, if we're gonna die I want to tell you the truth, and then what?
I'll say one.
And then just takes all the tension out of the movie in that moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what also, the tension always continually reduces, as Sam pointed out, that this is a B movie in reverse where it gets slower. That's not done for any reason. I think they just were making it up as they went along. So, like, there's continuously less tension. And in a few scenes from now, they get to their final house where there's just a crazy old lady. And we're just like
a whole new movie.
He's like, well, why have the tree thing that, like, is she gonna kill them? Like, what's happening?
Yeah. And which, again, I'm just so shocked that this movie almost cost $50 million, because 90% of the movie is like a few people in a field looking at a breeze.
Yeah.
Like, again, their fan budget, it's up there. Their Marky Mark budget, way up there.
Yeah, their Home Depot receipts are gonna be big.
Anyway, so this is you, Michael.
The next house they come upon is sealed. Its residents are trying to protect themselves from the toxin. Elliot's attempts to reason with them are deemed unsuccessful when the residents shoot Josh and Jared, the two kids who went along. Two teenage boys whom Elliot had earlier befriended.
Can you talk a little about that?
Well, I think there's a little moment that we missed where just Mark Wahlberg, while there's no wind, so they're like not in immediate danger, but he looks at a tree and is just like eyeing up the tree, and then the camera like pans up and plays ominous music at the tree, and we're like, this has to be a joke because it's so silly.
Oh, I can't wait to talk about the monologue later. Okay, but so the weird thing is, so they split up and they just get assigned to random teenage boys who die instantly in a pretty graphic way.
Pretty graphic.
But it felt like let's just get rid of these extra characters. Mm-hmm. Like, again, were you like, did you miss them? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was.
And this is like an excuse for the movie to keep happening, because there's no reason why they're at this house. Nothing happens at this house.
So then the three of them come on to an isolated house of Mrs. Jones in this crazy lady. Like, she is classic Hitchcock car crazy lady, right? Like, mm-hmm. She just says weird
stuff. If you're writing a B movie, I guess have this kind of character.
Oh my God. So she has no contact with that society. She's unaware of the current disaster. God, there is a scene where she's like going insane and Mark comes in. He's like, no, what's going on? It's fine. He's just not reacting. Like, she's like, you have to go, I'm gonna kill, you're gonna kill me, and he's like, no, what, why would you say that? So bizarre.
I can see him doing like a normal performance, and then M. Night's like, dude, Mark, you gotta do it sillier. You gotta say, no.
Okay, so he's in the house, and he starts going up to a plant, and he just has this long speech, like, you know, how could you do this to us? And he, like, he keeps
That's
talking
right.
to the plant.
He talks to a plant.
And then he reaches up, and he touches it, and he ends the monologue with, plastic.
My name is Elliot Moore. Just going to talk in a very positive manner, giving off good vibes. We're just here to use the bathroom. And then we're just gonna leave. I hope that's okay. Plastic.
Which is like, actually is funny though.
It's funny! But what is this movie?
It's not good, but it's also great.
So anyway, oh, and then the next morning, the old lady gets the toxin, and that's important because that means they're not just going after groups anymore. And she gets infected with the toxin in such a weird way because, like, so it makes you kill yourself. But what it makes her do is, like, act like a movie monster villain where she just butts her head through the glass and goes, ah!
Yeah. Well, yeah, she breaks her head through the window, which makes wind come in. So we're getting some tension in the movie. Realizing the plants are now targeting individuals, Elliot locks himself in the basement, but is separated from Alma and Jones, who are in the home's spring house out back. And they did foreshadow that there is a sort of speak tube or whatever they called it.
I don't think we've talked enough about how bizarre this movie is written. Like, some of the dialogue is so unnatural. They go to the spring house thing. Yes, there's a spring house out back. And here's how we use the spring house. And the spring house has a thing where you can talk through a pipe, and it sounds like people are right in the house. So we're like, all right, we get it. That's going to come.
Oh, it's foreshadowing. And then, like, 1 minute later, they're there. It's like, well, why even bother foreshadowing?
Yeah, I don't know. The dialogue is just so weird.
And foreshadowing to what effect? Because in this scene, I'm not even going to read this, they just decide within 1 second after being separated in these two houses, they're like, let's just not be in the houses anymore. And they decide to walk out. So yeah. It's like so much foreshadowing for what? Nothing. Anyway.
Do you remember how there is a through line of Marky Mark having a mood ring and then that's just nothing?
I forgot about that. Other characters ask him about it. There's scenes where he explains the different colors.
Yeah. And he explains about how people, you can read energy. And I'm like, I bet that's going to come up in Fighting the Trees. Nope.
Because it almost kind of makes sense. Like, oh, like he's adjusting his inner chemistry or something and they can't respond to it.
Yeah,
but it is,
but
just
no.
Like, I just have, I'm a cool science teacher, just a cool 40-year-old at the mood, right? That's just the character he is. So in this scene, so Alma's in one house and he's in the other house, and they have the speak tube so they can speak to each other, and they're like, we love each other, we've been in this house for 1 second and there's the dangerous wind outside, however we should just kill ourselves because what's the fucking point? And then, so they just walk outside with all the wind going on.
Very slowly, weirdly slowly.
It takes a long time, but then they're fine. And the outbreak's over.
Yep. 3 months later, and everything's fine, I guess, in the Northeast, even though most people kill themselves. They've adjusted their new life. They adopted the little girl. Okay, again, we're just talking about bizarre fucking dialogue. So an expert comes on and he's like, this was just a warning from the trees. It's weird that he's right, because that's dumb. So he states that humans have become a threat to the planet, and that's why the plants have responded aggressively. But here's a real line that he says. He says, and we'll know that's true if it happens a second time.
Then he looks
so
right,
like,
at the camera.
I wonder what's going to happen.
Can they just say, go on.
Oh, sorry. And then that scene ends with Alma's pregnant and we care about that for some reason.
Yeah.
And they're like, everything's happy.
He also reveals in the clip that this happened in 1 day. And that seems way too silly. Did I hear that right? Like,
I thought it was like, I guess they never go to sleep.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like,
it's never nighttime.
Yeah, huh. They just take a train. They go do all these things. They go to all these houses. So much happens. And they could have just like been inside. They could have slept through this.
Yeah. If someone's working a night shift, they just slept through it.
They're like, oh, I guess it happened. Got one in there. So here's the last thing that happens. Can you say this?
Tuileries?
In the Tuileries Gardens at the Louvre Palace in Paris, France, a scream is heard and everyone freezes in place and the wind rustles through the trees, signifying another attack by the police.
It happened again.
So it was, you know, they're taking revenge.
And I love that the trees like to just pick beautiful, architecturally significant places in the world. Like, the Louvre isn't even in Paris. I mean, it's not a densely populated area.
So, just that's the wrap up. Why make this film? If you want to make people...
I don't know, Michael. Why make anything?
Well, if you want to make... Because you want people to have an emotion or you want to convey some kind of idea. But if you wanted someone to make people scared, you wouldn't do this movie. If you wanted to make people laugh, you would make half this movie. If you wanted to be an environmentalist, you wouldn't just say, well, the trees are going to fucking kill you. I feel like you'd say a little bit more than that. So I don't know.
They're just mad. Yeah, they didn't even... It's funny, there were some one-star reviews that were like, fucking libs trying to shove environmentalism down our throats. And I'm like, did they? Because they had the line that, like, the plants are taking revenge because we're the greatest enemy. And that's it. You know, they don't, like, expand on that idea in any way.
Yeah, so don't drive less. They didn't end with that.
Nothing about what we're doing to the trees or what to push them over the edge.
Should we talk about why this is the greatest film ever made?
You want to start with greatest?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? For all my bitching... Again, I really did want my hot take to be, this is so much better than you think. And I guess it is, because I very much enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, it was quick. It's a fast movie.
Yeah, it's short, as we talked about last week. I like that a lot. Although, last week, I did have the caveat that I would like any 90-minute movie that tells a story. And I don't know if it did that.
Yeah, it's not really a story, but stuff happens.
Stuff happens. I think the beginning and end are like really, really well done. Just beautiful, or kind of beautiful, eerie, weird scenes. I do agree with you that there's some very good filmmaking going on.
I feel like there's a lot of...
genuinely laugh.
Yeah. There's some pieces to a really good movie all kind of puzzled together into this complete mess.
Honestly, it kind of almost makes me sad because I think it could have been a really good B-movie, maybe.
Because I feel like both actors... They just have skills that are not this, I feel like.
They're both funny people.
They're both engaging to watch.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if I'm thinking about, do I actually like Mark Wahlberg as a actor? I mean, I think he's probably secretly a Trumper. And I think it's weird that he gets up at 3 a.m. to pray. But
yeah.
Because like all the movies that he's really good in, he's just a super aggressive Boston douche. And it's like, isn't that who he is? Do you get to be a good actor for that? And I guess in Martin Scorsese's world, yeah, probably. But
I've made that point. A good actor, someone who could be like a lion, really convincingly.
Yeah. And I think probably the same is true with Zoe, but I like her shtick better in that she's good at playing kind of an exaggerated version of herself. But I like that. I enjoy watching that.
And there, I think, yeah, as you already said, there is some actual good directing. When you take out Zoe and Mark, it's like, oh, is this a good movie?
So I guess it's like if it had had a more consistent tone, right?
I think we lost the plot to this segment.
Sorry, yes. Anyway, greatest movie. It's tight. It's good. Watch it. It's so fun.
It is fun.
And it will make you laugh.
It will make, because they do say the word happening a lot, which is funny.
They really do. Like on the news, like with a straight face, they look right at me and like, this is happening. And they say it again, I cannot stress how hilariously bizarre the script is, where they just say things that people would not say.
And they smile and wink at the camera with a little ding.
Shot. Anyway, Michael, why is this not a great movie?
Because it's fucking weird, man. I want to like, oh, I made a silly movie on purpose. Let's not take it seriously and just have fun. But it's just not good at that.
No. I think that what M. Night Shyamalan's good at, he really failed in this movie, and that there isn't any mystery or tension.
Like, if you took out hold on. Take out the last scene that is good. Take out the first scene that is good. And I made the suggestion, make this movie in black and white, and then don't call it The Happening, called it The Green Attack, or whatever it was called. You do all those silly things, it's much better.
Yeah, I wish he had reacted a little more. The exposition about it being the trees could have been done sillier.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
maybe not. I would push back on that. It was pretty silly. And you'd also have to take out like the really gruesome murders, I think.
Or just make them a little like more Kool-Aid-y.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
So, yeah, it's not a good movie. Like, I feel like we're saying a lot of positive things about it, but it isn't good. It the construction is weird, the writing is weird, the acting is bad. It is not
and
a
M.
good
Night
movie.
It sounds like he knew. He's like, yeah, the tone was just wrong. It was trying to do two things, should have been one thing. I messed up.
Yep.
Which is cool.
You know what, Knight? You're a nice guy. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Should be called M. Nice. Sorry.
Michael, what grade do you give this film?
Let's see here. I give it a C-. You know, it could be worse than a C-.
Yeah, I was gonna give it a straight C. Only I'm really giving it a higher grade than I should, just because of how much fun I had watching it.
It was fun. It was a fun time.
Yeah. So
can I just say you were very angry the last episode that we chose this movie?
I was, and I regret that. You know, mm-hmm. This was an okay watch.
It was an okay watch.
I'm not gonna go out and watch Lady in the Water next or anything.
No.
Probably not as funny.
Probably not. What were we sponsored by?
Burt's Bees.
I'm assuming they make honey, or do they just give you bees?
Neither. Reconsider your name. But they make beeswax-based products like lip balm.
Oh, isn't?
No, it's really nice.
Is that sticky? What is beeswax? Is it sticky?
Well, it's like any other chapstick in the end product.
Get Burt's Bees, just like any other product.
But it's nice.
Like,
and they have little bees on their products. People like that.
If you're at Burt's Bees, you'll love our branding. So that was a good segment.
You're welcome, Burt's Bees.
What's our next film?
Oh, why don't we throw it over to Sam to tell us what our next film is?
Could you spin the wheel for me, Colleen?
I feel like they cling. I don't feel like they doot.
My wheel doots.
All right.
Our wheel also jingle bells. So,
yeah.
It looks like our next film is Moulin Rouge.
That is exciting. I am excited to watch that.
Let's all talk about Baz Luhrmann. Has he done other movies?
He did Great Gatsby and Romeo plus Juliet.
You know what just hit me? Yeah. Isn't Leguizamo in this film too?
Yes.
And he's in Romeo plus Juliet. He plays Tybalt.
So he'll be our new podcast favorite next time. Stay tuned for that trailer.
That'll be a fun thing to talk about.
Say the line.
And cut.
Sorry.
Hey everybody, just putting out an official Flaherty's on Films correction. Bruce Willis is not like a constant anti-masker, apparently. There was just like one incident where he did it and then he apologized, so that's it. Now here's the trailer.
He entered a world where fantasy is real, where he could be anything he wanted, and where he would discover the most dangerous temptation of all.
Come and get me, boys. Diamonds are a girl's best friend. I believe you were expecting me.
Yes. Silly, think you would fall in love with someone like me.
I can't fall in love with anyone. I make men believe what they want to believe.
Never knew I could feel like this.
I believe in truth, freedom, and above all things, love.
Like I've never seen the sky.
You're gonna be bad for me.
willing to provide the financial resources
to make you a star.
You don't have to wear that dress tonight.
I require a contract that binds Satine to me exclusively.
He could destroy everything.
I don't care. We have each other.
Make Christian believe you don't love him.
He'll fight for me.
Hurt him. Hurt him to save him.
Whatever happens, no matter how bad things get, we love one another.